This is Locked On Eagles. What's going on, everybody? Welcome in. It's Locked On Eagles, Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. This Friday edition of the podcast, I'm running on 2 hours of sleep. Don't even care because the Eagles got, Gino, a massive 34-27 win at Lambeau Field to get to 2-2. This lead story today is brought to you by Blinklist. You get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinklist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinklist.com/lockedon. Try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. Gino, Doug Peterson, and Carson Wentz, they waltz into Lambeau Field, a place Aaron Rodgers has been virtually unstoppable, especially when they get the 10-plus point lead that they did in the first half against an elite defense Carson Wentz had to go up against. And this offensive line, these running backs, Wentz, Peterson with play calling, they virtually did whatever they wanted. I thought this was Wentz's best game of his career. I know the yards don't look very impressive, but on third downs, he was lethal. Red zone, they were 5-for-5, 3-for-3 through the air. He kept them in this game until the defense finally had to make a play, and they came through. It was just so cool. It's so awesome to have a top-tier quarterback that can go toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers on the road in yet another tough road environment. Just what a win, and I think the first thing that I want to get into is just how damn impressive I thought Carson Wentz in this offense was yesterday.
Yeah, I tweeted it out last night, that 2017 Thursday night game against the Panthers, the 2017 game against the Rams, and last night's game are arguably three. Carson Wentz's biggest victories as a professional quarterback in the National Football League, all of which were on the road, all of which were in prime time, all of which were against conference opponents that will probably have playoff indications at the end of the year. If that isn't what your franchise quarterback is supposed to do, please tell me what your definition of a franchise quarterback is, because Carson played like a franchise quarterback yesterday. Yes, the yards weren't there, but the thing was, he was efficient. He got good field position. He took it down into the end zone multiple times against a Green Bay Packers defense that until yesterday allowed 35 points on the season.
Yep.
On the season. And they went into Lambeau Field on primetime on a short week and put up 34 points against a defense that you and I have lauded over for the past couple weeks.
Oh my gosh,
a defense which has played great both on the back end and the front end. They manhandled that front four all night long. They kept Carson clean all night long. We knew that he wasn't going to pass for 400 yards against that secondary. It's a great secondary. But he did what he had to do, and he was efficient, and he got them in position to win that game, and they won the game. Finally, the defense bailed Carson Wentz out when it mattered.
Yeah, finally, people made plays for him. Alshon Jeffrey and Dallas Goedert returned. They both scored touchdowns. The running backs made plays. The offensive line, once again, looked really damn sharp. It's just, look, and Aaron Rodgers came to play today. I thought he put together, even though Matt LaFleur is a coward, and Gino, I know you're going to get into that. He's a coward as a head coach, a coward as coach. It really makes me appreciate Doug Peterson watching that coaching of Green Bay yesterday and Detroit last Sunday. But Aaron Rodgers was on his game, and Wentz came in and matched him blow for blow. Even when the Eagles got the lead and Green Bay kept answering back with tying the ball game up, Wentz would answer back once again and keep dragging Jim Schwartz and the defense to the finish line. And once again, it's just, if you don't appreciate Carson Wentz after this, on the pace, by the way, that he's at, he's on pace, Gino, right now to shatter that 2017 single-season touchdown record because he's got 9 right now in 4 games. I think he's on pace. Last night I did the math. I think he's on pace for 35 or 36 passing touchdowns right now, and he is in historic company. Listen to this. Most games with 2-plus passing touchdowns in his first 44 career games. Dan Marino, number 1 at 33 games. Kurt Warner, number 2 at 30. Johnny Unitas at 3 with 27. Carson Wentz, 26. Carson Wentz is up there with 3 Hall of Famers in multiple statistical categories, including that one. He had 3 touchdowns yesterday, and it's just, man, again, that offense, it put together the most complete game that I've seen in a long time, especially when Carson Wentz is the quarterback. Fast starts for two straight weeks. I thought Doug Peterson's plan was very similar to games down the stretch last year. A lot of RPO. The game plan was simplistic, screen plays, and they rode an offensive line and a Miles Sanders, Jordan Howard, Lightning and Thunder duo that just was not going to be stopped.
Yeah, it's funny that you brought up that tweet. I have another stat here from Ruben Frank. With most passing touchdowns in the first 44 career games, we talk about Wentz being on pace for historic company. He's already ahead of his MVP-esque season, but as Rube pointed out here, he is fifth in the most amount of touchdown passes in 44 career games. An unbelievable company. 101 from Marino, 98 from Warner, 84 from Unitas, 80 for Luck, and one short of Luck is Peyton Manning. Carson Wentz, one ahead of Peyton Manning at 78. Wentz has 79. So the kid is balling at an unbelievable level. And yesterday just solidified. I thought they were going to have to come away with a defensive win and kind of squeak it out and hopefully get to Aaron Rodgers. Not the case at all. Completely opposite of the way I thought that game was going to go. And that offense stepped up in a huge moment. And like you said, Lou, they did a lot of things that were like what we saw down the stretch with Nick Foles last year. Simplistic game plan, which they have done consistently on Thursday nights, seeing that they're undefeated. When they simplify things, get the ball out of Carson's hand, get him into a rhythm. You saw the confidence in him when he was driving down the field. Never once was the look on Carson Wentz's face a look that was going to waver in the face of adversity.
No, he was so poised.
He was locked in from the second that game started. This was my most impressed I've been with Carson in a long time, outside of the last two drives. But, man, they put together a complete game. I do have my qualms with Doug Peterson punting inside of opponent's territory that early in the game. I think they're on the 44 with about a 4th and 5, and they punted, which is very unlike Doug Peterson. But, hey, man, scoring 34 points in that environment against that defense and a defensive coordinator in Mike Pettine who knows how to put his guys in the best situation to win, which is quite remarkable to see because we have no idea what that is like. But Pettine has a very good defense. We have a very good offense. I knew it was just going to come down to a battle of the guys, as Pete Bukowski of Locked On Packers said, and our guys beat their guys. And we knew it wasn't going to be a game of one team is superior to the other. It's going to be who out-schemed the other. And Doug Peterson, man, hats off to him. He schemed up a hell of a ball game yesterday.
Yeah, especially Eagles offense versus Packers defense. We were saying it all week. It was going to come down to coaching, and it was going to come down to stars just matching the other stars because there weren't a lot of mismatches. There weren't a lot of things for each side to exploit from a weakness standpoint. And, you know, you're right. It came down to maybe like the defense would have to win this game before the game started. And then as the game went on, and don't worry, segment two, we'll get into Jim Schwartz and some of the defensive liabilities. But you saw from almost the jump, okay, this is a game that Carson Wentz, I thought to myself, all right, Carson Wentz, he's matching Aaron Rodgers blow for blow. He's going to have to do that for four quarters here, and it might come down to who gets the ball last. Honestly, that was the way I was thinking. And look, this Eagles defense, if they do one thing right, it's getting goal line stands, and they got back-to-back ones when it counted. But this, don't get me wrong, don't let it be thought otherwise. This was an offensive win for the Eagles. And, you know, Gino, you see what an elite run-blocking unit can do with talent in the run game. Sure, they can make it work with even sometimes Josh Adams last year or a Wendell Smallwood. But when you have the dynamic duo of Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders. Sanders, by the way, the past 2 weeks has 198 yards from scrimmage. So you take away the two fumbles, and the rookie second-round pick is looking like the guy that played at Penn State last year and replaced Saquon Barkley with ease. And he's really the guy that got it going with that 65-yard kickoff return in the first half, and the Eagles are trailing 10-0, giving Wentz in the offense a short field. I thought his plays, his cuts were more decisive. He was picking the right times to cut inside. Some of the jump cuts on the outside, making more happen, were unbelievable. He had another 30-plus yard play yesterday. And at the same time, here's Jordan Howard, that's in a more elusive yet powerful LeGarrette Blount, who just could not be taken down yesterday. Do you know, it's like, again, this offensive line has always been able to pave the way for running backs, no matter the talent. But you see what guys can do when they make more out of those great blocks. I mean, there were holes yesterday, especially on the left side. Props to Isaac Seumalo, who has completely bounced back to perfection the last 2 weeks after a historically bad, a career low game for him against Atlanta on Sunday night 2 weeks ago. The holes they were parting for these guys. I mean, you could fit there was a Photoshop where you could fit eight Jordan Howards in the B gap or the C gap. So, you know, the offensive line paved the way. They held the Packers defense, an elite unit, to no sacks. They had no turnovers, and Howard and Sanders did the rest and made more out of the great opportunities they were given. So, as a guy that loves to pay attention to the running back position, they had to go through what the Eagles went through last year. I'm over the moon with how the Eagles won this football game yesterday, over 170 rushing yards. So we talk about Wentz, but man, this was another thing up front through the trenches in the run game. They won this the old school way too.
It was one thing that I presented to Pete Bukowski on the Crossover Wednesday. I presented him one question. I said, the Packers' defensive line has looked excellent, but they've gone up against three weaker offensive lines. How do you think they will respond with an elite unit going up against the Eagles? I think we answered that question yesterday handedly.
Yep.
I've never seen Isaac Seumalo look so good in a game in multiple different points. Yes, he had ups and downs, but his bright spots were very bright. Jason Peters looked like a rejuvenated young Jason Peters, even though he got lost in some pass coverage reps, but that's okay.
He's an old man. Give him a pass. Yep.
We didn't even hear Lane Johnson's name yesterday. We didn't even hear Brandon Brooks' name yesterday. Jason Kelce is making blocks downfield. They did what a Philadelphia Eagles offensive line was supposed to do. And this team was built to win inside and out. And they won because they purely dominated on the ground, and it allowed to open up the field for Carson Wentz and get into a rhythm, on top of having two guys that could rush for 150 yards collectively. And we talked about the usage between them. You finally get it right. You finally only give Darren Sproles one carry. You give Miles Sanders 11. You give Jordan Howard 15. I'm fine with that. Flip-flop them. Either way, one day give 15 to one, give 10 to another. However you want to use those two, just feed the hot hand. I think there were a couple times that they may have swapped Sanders when he was getting hot. I know he had a couple big runs, and then they put Howard in.
Yeah,
so they still have to get that down. But, man, the offensive line, Howard went for 15 for 87, two touchdowns, 5.8 yards a carry with a 19-yard long. Miles Sanders, 11 for 72, 6.5 yards a carry for 30-yard long. A lot of question marks around Miles Sanders coming into this week. Can he hold on to the football? If you looked at his advanced statistics, his efficiency ratings weren't the highest. But, man, Doug Peterson remained confident in the kid. Deuce Staley remained confident in the kid. That kick return arguably was the most important point in the game, and it sparked an offensive just run that occurred for the rest of the game. No points in the first quarter, 34 points in quarters 2 through 4. That's huge, and it all stemmed from those two guys. Man, Jordan Howard is a mean, mean man when he runs the football. And then you just have this change of pace in Miles Sanders. It's like it's like trying to hit a fastball, and it's like trying to hit a curveball. Because Jordan Howard, you know he's going to come right down the pike. You know he's going to hit you right in the mouth, and you just have to try and tackle him. But Miles Sanders, you have no idea where that kid is going to go. Trying to watch him run is like just throwing darts blindfolded.
It's McCoy, man. It's McCoy.
It is. It really is an undisciplined runner in his rookie year, but he's progressively gotten better the past four games, and you have seen it. You made a great point saying he looks so decisive. There were times when you saw him questioning if he should bounce it outside, and he hits the gap, and he has some big gains. It's like, man, that's what we know you can do, and just the more patience he continues to have and the more understanding of that offensive line working, Miles Sanders is just going to become more and more electric, and it's not going to be long before we see him break off 50, 60, 70-plus yard runs when he gets into the second level, because it's going to happen if this offensive line plays the way they did yesterday.
Well, he would even do things where, like, he would make it seem like he kept holding because there was a corner on outside contain. He would keep making it seem like he was going to bounce it to the outside, only to have that vintage jump cut inside. But the corner, he kept the corner there. It's almost like a quarterback keeping a safety in the middle of the field with your eyes, right? You're keeping them there until you make your move. And Sanders, look, again, the kid's 22 years old. He played 1 year of collegiate ball because he was a backup to Saquon Barkley pretty much at Penn State for, what, his first 2 years there? I forget how long. And he's going to get better week after week. You knew he wasn't going to be a finished product after three games. And I thought, like you said, he has gradually gotten better and better. He's averaged over 4 yards a carry now for two straight weeks. And he's a testament. Isaac Seumalo's a testament. Although Nelson Agholor didn't do anything over the past 2 years, he's a testament to Doug Peterson sticking with his guys, believing in them, not burying them for mental mistakes for months. Like some teams, even Bill Belichick can do a lot of the time with really talented younger players. He stuck with his guys, and man, did it pay off, specifically with Seumalo and Miles Sanders this week, and for Seumalo, really, the last 2 weeks. But another reason, Gino, they were able to run so well is the return of Dallas Goedert in 12 personnel against that nickel defense. 12 personnel versus the nickel. With how good Dallas Goedert was blocking yesterday, he was literally like an extra right tackle out there with some of the plays he was making. Having him there, yes, he scored a receiving touchdown, and it was great. He recognized the coverage, inside leverage, in the red zone, to perfection. Looked just like Zach Ertz on that play. There's a reason they compared him to Zach Ertz coming out of South Dakota. But the bigger story with that was he and even Ertz were on a mission. Everybody was in the run game. Like 12 personnel versus nickel, it was one of the huge advantages yesterday for the Eagles offense.
You saw, and if you went down to the one play when Dallas Goedert scored his touchdown, he identified the coverage immediately. He made it known to Carson that he had the favorable matchup against the nickel defense, and he won the route as
I was nervous when didn't see it
route.
Either.
Yeah, me too. I didn't think he could hear him. I didn't see him look over
he was
until
looking
the last
on,
second.
Yeah, because he was talking to Alshon on the far left side. When Goddard was waving his hands, I'm like, oh, no, he's not seeing that. But they saw it.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that Doug talked about specifically when they lost those previous 2 weeks is the ineptibility of running 12 personnel without Dallas Goedert. He is instrumental. As a blocker, he is so much beyond what Zach Ertz ever has been as a blocker.
It's light years.
Zach Ertz has evolved from being a liability to being somebody you could rely on, and you saw that yesterday. He did well himself blocking yesterday. But Dallas Goedert, like you said, was basically a sixth offensive lineman. The kid is unbelievable, and the way he runs routes is truly unbelievable, and the way he plays special teams is truly unbelievable. You saw a kid from low-level D1 football come into a game yesterday and absolutely dominate all-pro, Pro Bowl-type players in Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith and Kenny Clark, and he didn't hesitate to take on blocks from anybody. He was on the offensive line pulling, doing whatever. He was all over the field, and 12 personnel, a gift from the gods to see it working effectively because it is such a matchup nightmare. You saw times when Zach Ertz was matched up against Preston Smith because they didn't have any other linebackers or safeties that could cover. Those are the mismatches that we talked about prior to the season, that you're going to be in these favorable type matchups, and it's because of the depth and the skill level of your players. They didn't even target Nelson Agholor one time yesterday because they were so set in their ways of running 12 personnel, and they really weren't threatened at the idea of having to feed Nelson Agholor, which is huge. And I think collectively the wide receivers didn't have the greatest game in the world. Alshon Jeffrey still is hurt. Matt Collins still has just some
his
questionable
presence,
plays
though, right?
That he makes.
With
Alshon. Yeah, it's huge. Yes, it's huge. Yeah. But like overall, he still wasn't 100%. Like he should be beating Kevin King in one-on-one situations every single day. But you could see that he was hampered by that a little. But when you knew that the tight ends were going to be a pivotal matchup in this game, because you had to get that run game going, because they keep everything in front of them with a very good secondary, you knew that it was going to be pivotal to run and pass out of 12 personnel. And they did a great job disguising that those plays. And I can't wait to go back and see it again because it was truly impressive to see that offense click how it is supposed to.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one to go back and watch for sure. I watched a lot of highlights throughout the night yesterday after the game. And yeah, with Jeffrey, look, he only had 38 receiving yards, but he caught a touchdown on Jaire Alexander in the red zone. And just his presence, I think, was calming for the offense. And Goddard, too, just knowing that they have those guys to go to. He converted a third and seven in the second half that was big to sustain, you know, yet another drive. Carson Wentz, by the way, on third downs, just, I tweeted it out yesterday, he's an elite third down quarterback and in the red zone, too. They were 5 for 5 in the red zone, all touchdowns, and they were 3 for 3 when they were throwing the football in the red zone. So he in the offensive line and just everybody, this was a total team effort. And we're going to get into in segment two really a lot of the defense. But for right now, Gino, as we wrap up this first segment here of the postgame show on this Friday edition of Lockdown Eagles, one thing the defense does, they did it twice against the Falcons, 2017 in the divisional round, 2018 week one. They did it against the Colts last year, week three. They did it against the Rams in LA in a very similar type environment, a very similar type of must-win game last year, even though it was week, 14 instead of week four. Yep. It was still, I got those Rams vibes yesterday with that game because of how important it was against such a great team. One thing the defense does is they know how to make goal line stands. And Craig James, here comes a 23-year-old cornerback.
Craig, not Rick James. That's Craig, what I'm naming.
Craig, not Rick James, comes in. He has never played a defensive snap in his life. He's 23 years old. In the red zone with less than a minute to go against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. With Avante Maddox carted off on a stretcher, Sidney Jones out for the game with a hamstring injury. They're going to target him instantly. We all knew it. I was terrified of it. I was saying they're going after Craig James here. Craig James tips the ball up in the air. Not only does he jump the route on Marquez Valdes-Scantling to pop the ball into the heavens, right into the arms of Nigel Bradham, who finally caught a ball, by the way, for the first time since 2016. He made up for it yesterday. He should have had a pick six earlier in the game. Bradham, he made the most of his second opportunity, but it was all, Gino, because of such an unsung, unexpected hero in Craig James, who, by the way, worked through manufactured traffic to what was supposed to open Valdes-Scantling with those intercepting routes, and he finds a way to make a play on the ball. It's the complete definition of next man up. It was such a cool story.
You could write a book on big Eagles games and just like how they break down.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
When it comes to defense, there's going to be a strip sack. Their cornerbacks are going to get hurt. They're going to allow the quarterback to throw for 400 plus yards.
Seriously.
And they're going to hold them in the red zone. It's the same thing every single time. But when you're down to Rasul Douglas and Craig James and no others, that's it. That was the cornerbacks that they had for the final play on defense. Like you said, and like Craig James said in his interview yesterday, he knew that they were going to target him.
Oh, yeah, everybody did.
Did not crumble under that pressure. After one of the scariest moments for the entire team, seeing Avante Maddox go down, that has to be just, I don't know how you play after that. My fiance looked at me, she's like, how do you even go on the field after seeing that?
Especially, like, in that situation.
The game's on the line. Like, right. That they won that game for Avante Maddox. Like, he lifted that team up. Like, as scary it is to see, that team rallied around their guy. And Craig James, hats off to him. He exposed Matt LaFleur for being the absolute coward that he is. And absolute unaware. We talk about Jim Schwartz being unaware. Matt LaFleur is unaware, and Warren Sharp, one of my favorite reads out there, he says, clearly Matt LaFleur is unaware, which makes a lot of sense that I was saying that. 6 plays inside the 5, 6 passes, 0 points, 1 interception. That is terrible, especially when they were operating at a 57% success rate running the ball versus 45% passing the ball. Matt LaFleur cost them that game. The Eagles' defense wasn't stopping a nosebleed yesterday. Yes, does Davante Adams going out, that helps a lot. But Matt LaFleur had no idea how to call a play in the red zone. But let's get away from Matt LaFleur. I had to expose him for the coward that he was. He got his 30 seconds of fame on this show.
Yep.
We're going to go back to the man that it all came down to, and that being not Craig James, not the one who won the game, and Rasul Douglas, Lou. if Rasul hasn't been on this team the past 4 weeks, I don't know where they would have been. He has been their most consistent corner.
I feel vindicated.
Without a doubt. And, man, I love Sidney Jones, and I'll pound the table for the rest of time, but it's just like the best availability is reliability, or the best reliability is availability, whatever way you want to say it, and he just keeps getting injured, and it's like,
Yep. We
need to make a decision, not next year, not this off season, like right now, within the next
before this show's over, we're going to get into the quarterback and the Ramsey.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Hold off for a couple minutes. Don't worry, we'll get into it for
sure. Okay.
We're going to get into it.
Man, they're just like real quick, there are some guys that you have to just point out, like Josh Sweat, for being in the position that he's in, playing a three tech, something that he hasn't really done since his days at Florida State, had a very good game. The safeties had a very good game.
Ronnie
once
McLeod,
again,
dude,
you
was all over
me, like,
the field.
Three in the morning saying Ronnie McLeod had a game, and I cannot argue with that at all. The one thing that I will complain about is Jim Schwartz continues to line safeties up one on one versus elite corners or elite wide receivers. He did that against Atlanta with Rodney McLeod covering Julio Jones one-on-one. He did that yesterday with DA covering Rodney McLeod covering him one-on-one. Not the greatest game plan in my opinion, but when he was playing single high and double high and they adjusted the coverage, things kind of got better. Not really, but without the safeties, man, even Sendejo made plays. Like, without this safety core, this team would be in big trouble, because these corners, hey, as much as Rasul Douglas can do, like you tweeted yesterday, the Jon Snow gif where he just
That's
tries to hold
gif.
Off any and all competitors, man, the safety stepped up when it matters, and Derek Barnett, even though he should have been ejected, gets off the edge, shows off some unbelievable bend to get that strip sack. It was just one of those games that nothing made sense to me, and
it was
an Eagles victory. Like that was an Eagles game.
Yeah, that was exactly how Eagles games have gone for the past 3 years, where, I mean, especially, like, that's very similar to the Patriots Super Bowl game, where it's the defense can't do anything all game. They literally have no answers against one of the greatest of all time. But then when the chips are down in the fourth quarter, they just make one play. That's all they had to do. And really, they came up with, I should give more credit than that. They had two goal line stands in the second half, which is just so, it's damn impressive considering how bad they were virtually in every other area yesterday. So we'll get into the defense coming up. We got to hit a break here, right here on the post game show. The Eagles take it 34-27, and 2-2 has never looked so good. This looks so much better than last year's 2-2 with a win in Green Bay against what was the 3-0 Green Bay Packers. We'll be right back. And guys, we are sponsored today by MyBookie. At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Me and Gino are going to be very relaxed this Sunday as we watch all the games, as the Eagles got a big W on Thursday night, so we get to relax and watch all the Sunday and Monday games knowing
that
the Eagles won.
Type of victory.
It's the best type of victory. And look, there's game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, except for the Packers. Running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them like Jordan Howard yesterday. There's nothing quite like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the game even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sportsbook. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and mybookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play, and it's where you should too. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Trust me, do the smart thing. If you're gonna bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet. Of course, the NFL season is always the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, everybody, we are back. This is Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri on Locked on Eagles, recapping the Eagles' big 34-27 win. Their backs were against the wall. They were in a corner. And, Gino, look, we're going to get into some of the defensive problems right now, but some positives just to start it off from the defense. Of course, like we said in segment one, two goal line stands. That's really been the identity of this defense under Jim Schwartz, is bend, don't break. I thought the run defense continues to be elite. They've only allowed 97 rushing yards all year in the first month. I mean, that is incredible. I thought the pass rush got there more consistently yesterday with the front four. Rasul Douglas watched the secondary burn down to the ground around him, but he held his own against yet another top-tier receiver. He's done that with Michael Thomas last year, Julio Jones this year, Kenny Golladay and TJ Hockenson, now Devontae Adams. To me, he is the best cornerback on the team. You were talking about it before. So, look, there were positives in this game for the defense. But my God, can we talk about Jim Schwartz and how
situational
bad...
Situational Jim.
You were cracking me up all day with the situational Jim tweets. It's just... But you were so right. The random blitzes on third downs after like two... He kept abandoning having two safeties over top, mm-hmm. and it was working. And yet he kept going back to the blitzes, these mind-numbing blitzes. And listen to Aaron Rodgers' numbers.
Ron Jaworski tweeted this out.
You got to deal with it. You got to deal with it. Listen to this. When Rodgers was blitzed, 75% completion percentage, 148 yards, 18.5 yards per attempt. He had a touchdown and a 156.3 passer rating when he was not blitzed. 62% completion percentage. It goes down by 13, 6.1 yards per attempt versus 18.5. One touchdown, but he had one interception and a 77.5 passer rating. And yet Jim Schwartz, Gino, kept going back to it. Me and you are ready to just drive that man to whatever his next job is going to be.
Situational Jim Schwartz. He's not going to change. He hasn't changed in 4 years since he's been here. He's just very stuck in his ways. And he didn't even change before he came here. I mean, you can look back to his days in Buffalo. And
oh, it was the same defense.
I saw a tweet circulating of, I think it said, can we get Ronald Darby from Buffalo back? And I don't know why people were so apt to like praise that tweet, because if you went back and watched Jim Schwartz and how he set up Ronald Darby in that defense, like he just set him up to fail, much like he did to all of his corners yesterday. And I think Shield Kapadia of The Athletic had the greatest tweet describing how Jim Schwartz chooses his blitz. He said he calls him an emotional blitzer, which I think is in a great way to describe
like
him, saying sometimes he says, F it, let's go get a turnover. And that hasn't worked. 14 yards per play, per pass on blitzes, 4 explosive plays, 0 sacks, and I think they've only gotten 1 pass deflection, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Why you continue to look at quarterbacks and numbers like Matt Stafford and Aaron Rodgers, who excel, not just are good, not just are great, but excel against the blitz.
Well, we even said it on Tuesday. Me and you were literally saying you cannot blitz Aaron Rodgers. He will kill you.
Without a doubt. Yeah, that's the one. That's what I'm saying. It's like you have the clear-cut evidence in front of you to not go out and blitz, but yet you continue to do it anyway. And not even just blitzing, like the third and longs, playing 12 yards off the ball and just inviting them to catch the ball when your defense couldn't stop anybody in the air is just maddening. And it's like, Jim, let your guys play press for once. Rasul Douglas doesn't play well in bail. Let him be physical. Let Sidney Jones be physical. That one long run or pass that he had to Devontae Adams before he went out on Sidney Jones' side, he just didn't even get his hands on him. Avante Maddox plays in Jupiter when he plays bell coverage. It just makes no sense.
And have a safety over top when you do it. Don't put them in cover zero when you
decide
to put
them up
front.
These corners are not good enough to play any cover zero in the history of this
team. At least not consistent enough, yeah, for sure.
No, you are not consistent enough. You do not have one-on-one lockdown corners yet until you get Jalen Ramsey to play that style of defense. You need two safeties over the top. And when they did, they looked pretty good. Like, when the times that they had to settle in and cover, there were times when the pressure was getting there. It just wasn't Aaron Rodgers rushed for more yards than any running back has all season because the pressure wasn't getting home, and on the back end, they were covering. I am fine with that. I am fine with that. But allowing Aaron Rodgers, who excels against the blitz and has done it for the past almost two decades now, Jim Schwartz coached against him in Detroit and still doesn't know how to coach against him.
Yep.
It is so unbelievable that Jim Schwartz cannot get out of his own way and call a good game. Like, we have known that he can. Is so just maddening isn't even the word. It's just baffling to
me. My confidence was literally at zero yesterday when it was 3rd and 6 plus.
Oh, they were converting every time.
I had no confidence they could stop it because, once again, they, because they refused to have two safeties over top for the majority of the game, they would line up their corners once again, like 15 yards deep, and it was just free gimme yards all the time, to the point where Seth Joyner is having a heart attack on Twitter.
Oh, I love
writing
that.
In all caps.
I love that.
it's just he holds Schwartz accountable all the time, and it's just Schwartz's defense is the opposite of what Joyner is used to, of his old Eagles 90s defense, right?
Jim Schwartz was rolling over in his grave watching that defense yesterday because
Jim Johnson, you mean?
Oh, yeah, Jim Johnson, I apologize. The late, great Jim Johnson was rolling over in his grave watching that display of defense yesterday. I mean, there's only so much that front can do. Fletcher Cox is clearly not 100%. He was gassed. The guy, we know that he can't take that many snaps. Like,
right.
He's efficient when he has guys behind him that you can rotate in, and the depth is a concern for sure. But on the back end, like, when you know that your guys are gassed up front, there were plays when Fletcher Cox was just in there just to take a double team and not even moving when on those last couple
like
drives.
A decoy,
and,
yeah,
literally just a decoy. And it's like, when your secondary just needs to cover, just don't. How many times did they just play zone and just wait for the zone to break down? Like, playing zone defense, you can only cover for 2 to 3 seconds until it breaks down. And it was every time. It was literally every time the guy would go sit in the honey hole and just wait for Aaron Rodgers to find him. It was every single time. And like you said, Lou, my confidence was just I was just confident that Aaron Rodgers was going to get the ball down the field. That's the only thing I was confident about. They weren't going to make stops. And, hey, yeah, we could stop the run, but you can allow 400-plus yards in the pass game and be 1 yard away from losing that game yesterday, and just a missed pass interference, Craig James pass breakup away from – going into overtime. And just Jim Schwartz needs to take a book out of Doug Peterson's book. Doug can be up and down at times, but when Doug needs to know that it is his unit that has to get things done, he will get it done. And when that offense needed to get points and knew it was going to be a shootout, they did exactly that.
Yep.
Jim Schwartz has to know, I need one stop. My front isn't getting there. Let me cover on the back end, but do it in a way that you can cover for longer than 3 seconds and the entire defense just breaks down. Why they weren't just face guarding Davante Adams with two players was just – it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, like, and the guy also another flaw in Schwartz's thing here is Rasul Douglas is having a great game against Davante Adams, but in your scheme, you don't have corners switch sides for some godforsaken reason. I have no idea. Maybe it's because quarterbacks throw on their right side more, so he wants Douglas to stay on the opposite side. But for me, it just doesn't make sense when Rasul Douglas is the literally only positive you have at the cornerback position yesterday. Sidney Jones got hurt. Avante Maddox was getting roasted all game long. And you have Douglas staying on one side. I mean, there were plays that Jalen Mills would have got burned by a double move, and Rasul Douglas stayed disciplined,
yeah,
even on Davante
great
Adams.
On that one move.
Yeah,
yep.
He in the red zone. We talk about how good Jalen Mills is as a red zone corner. Douglas yesterday put on a clinic in the red zone, especially on those two goal line stands. I was watching him specifically and focused on him. Davante Adams wasn't there for the final one, but he was a bright spot of that defense. And I did think the front four got there a little bit more, especially as the game got along. But that's the other thing, Gino, too. Like, this isn't, I mean, a lot of it's on Schwartz. Trust me. Me and you are probably the hardest on Jim Schwartz of maybe any Eagles podcast, but the pass rush cannot finish. Like, Brandon Graham, how many sacks are going to slip through his grasp? Once again,
it's unbelievable.
I say it all the time. There's a reason the guy has never had 10 sacks. Derek Barnett yesterday should have had another sack. Fletcher Cox should have had another sack. Aaron Rodgers broke his ankles like he was 27 years old instead of like 37. They got to finish. It was just an undisciplined performance outside of, again, when it mattered, when the chips were down, we saw the 27 and 2018 championship caliber defense at the goal line. But for the other 3.5 quarters, it was undisciplined tackling, penalties. I think Doug Peterson said
it's,
8 first downs were allowed from
BS.
Penalties.
It's BS.
You know, that's the problem, is this defense is very undisciplined, and Jim Schwartz has a history of not really showing any sort of accountability, see Ronald Darby. And that's a very big concern. And, you know, the health is a huge concern. The defense is very concerning right now. Good Lord, let's get into it. like, I have never seen, there's going to be a documentary on the Eagles cornerback depth because it's so uniquely catastrophic right now. Avante Maddox carted off. Sidney Jones, another hamstring injury. Gino, I think we can almost put it on right now because it's another soft tissue problem. Sidney Jones, I like his talent. He has been good this year. He's injury prone. I tweeted it yesterday at like 4 a.m. I said, all right, I'm in. Let's do it. 2 first-round picks. I don't want to look when you give them away, but damn it, just give it to him. I need Jalen Ramsey here because Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills are not starting corners for what I want in the defense. Sidney Jones, I just do not trust to stay healthy. Do the deal like it's 2015 and you're going to get Marcus Mariota. Go get Jalen Ramsey because they have to at this point. It's really heartbreaking for Jones because he's still so young. I think he's 22 or 23 years old, and he has shown a lot of promise this year. But again, the injury-prone label is justifiably placed on you when it's recurring injuries like a soft tissue problem, hamstring injuries over and over again. And since the torn Achilles, that has been the Achilles heel of Sidney Jones. And I don't trust it anymore, man. This week, on a long week, Howie Roseman needs to take some time today, as you were hinting in segment one, and put a package together and go get a Ramsey who has been sick this week, left to go, you know, with his wife as they were having a kid. But there's just... He still wants to be traded from Jacksonville. He hasn't been with the team all week. Go get this done now. They have to. They have to, Gino. They have to.
One quick thing. Avante Maddox from this is from Rappaport, flew home with the team last night. Movement, and he's good to go. So that's great
awesome.
To hear.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And then real quick, turning back before I talk Ramsey, the undisciplined play of the defense is just – that doesn't fly to me. Like – the stupid late hit from Derek Barnett, like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
Zach Brown coming in late, just these stupid, stupid, stupid penalties just come back to bite them. And these aren't rookies. These are veteran players making these stupid mistakes. And Jim just doesn't hold anybody accountable. Like, doesn't even take Derek Barnett off the field after that penalty for a play. Like, that drives me bananas, and that is not going to fly in my book because this defense – yeah, they squeaked one out yesterday, but those BS little plays are going to come back to bite them in a big way.
They will.
Who wouldn't have BS plays like that and probably who wouldn't have as many pass interference calls and probably would be a bigger playmaker would be a guy like Jalen Ramsey. And Lou, we sit here after a game where Aaron Rodgers threw for 400 yards with currently two healthy cornerbacks on this team, one on the PUP list. Ronald Darby, he'll be out for God knows how long. Sidney Jones will be out for God knows how long. Avante Maddox, we don't know what's going on with him.
We know LeBlanc and Mills won't be back till at least... Mills can't come back till week 8. LeBlanc, I don't think, can come
LeBlanc's
back till week 6.
LeBlanc's on IR, yep.
Right, so...
Or I think the other way around.
Or, PUP, I'm sorry, yeah. Mills is on PUP, so he can come back in 2 weeks week if he's healthy, and LeBlanc can come back week 8. So we know at least they're without those two for at least 2 more weeks... or for another month with Mills. And then, yeah, like you said, I mean, Darby, Jones, Maddox. I mean, the only guy, it's again, I loved using that Jon Snow give yesterday with Rasul Douglas because it's him and a guy that has played 2 snaps. And while, yes, the second one was the game-winning play, it was only 2 snaps. I mean, you cannot go through this season with a Chandon Sullivan and Devontae Bosby-like situation again on your hands. You can't do it.
Look, there are two ways to resolve the issue that we have, and that is defense. It's either one, you bring in another fastball at the defensive tackle position to be alongside Fletcher Cox, which I really can't justify because you have Malik Jackson coming back next season. You still have him for 2 more years, and you have Tim Jernigan, who should be back within the next month or so. So you're going to be back healthy there. On the back end, a position that you have so many question marks about both the near future and long-term future about the position. Jalen Mills is a free agent after this year. Ronald Darby is a free agent after this year. Cravon LeBlanc just signed another 1-year extension, thankfully. Avante Maddox still on his rookie deal. Sidney Jones still on his rookie deal. Rasul Douglas still on his rookie deal. That's a lot of question marks that you have. Right now, the only corner I can justify paying is Rasul Douglas. Not going to get cornerback 1 money, but he justifies being on roster past his 4 years. You have a cornerback in his prime at 24 years old, arguably the best cornerback in the league. The Eagles' biggest Achilles heel is covering on the back end. They want their front four to get there to take down the quarterback, but can't do it because they can't cover on the back end. If there was ever a match made in heaven for a player to come to a situation, not just for the current term, but to lock him up long term, because, man, if you bring him to town, you lock him up until he retires, because that type of player you have not seen since the days of Asante Samuel, and before that, going back to the days of Bobby Taylor, Sheldon Brown, Troy Vincent, and Lito Shepard. You need a lockdown cornerback. Man, just imagine if that team yesterday had to go up against a Patrick Mahomes-led offense. They would have let up 700 yards.
Yeah.
Easily. They would have let up 700 yards.
With Andy Reid as the play caller instead of Matt LaFleur, you're damn right.
You need a guy that you can rely on. And outside of Rasul Douglas, I can't rely on anybody. And to me, we look at first-round draft picks. We look at what we got out of Marcus Smith. We look out at what we got with Danny Watkins. They're question marks. Go get a guy who right now is at the prime of his career and is only going to continue to get better, and he could come in and be the guy for this defense and allow Fletcher Cox to have some breathing room and not just feel like it's all on him and Brandon Graham, and let those guys breathe and give the front some effort to breathe. And Howie knows that this is the move to make. It's just what is going to be the cost. And to me, I am paying just about anything to bring him in-house right now, because I have 0.000% confidence in this secondary. And we're only 4 weeks in, luckily. You can turn it around now. Now is where the season changed. That win yesterday was a season-changing victory. Now let's go make a season-changing acquisition and get Jalen Ramsey, because if you have an elite defense to couple with this offense that is operating at a three-year high of points scored through four games at 110, which is up over 30 from last year of 82, man, you are going to have one of the best rosters. And we knew that the secondary was a huge question mark. We said which guys would step up this season. Right now it's only one of them, and for 4 to 5 question marks to be in that secondary, only one being answered, it's not great through four games. And you still have good wide receivers that you're going up against. You got Amari Cooper twice. You got whoever New England is going to bring to you. You have a quick John Brown in Buffalo. You have a bunch of other big names you're going to have to go against. Terry McLaurin again. Go get a guy that you can rely on and just say, hey, go cover their best receiver. We'll see you after 60 minutes. That's
it. And it's going to be, look, as a guy that likes my draft picks and can't wait for the draft even during the season.
But you have an extra 3 with Foles this year. Like,
yes. No, trust me. Like, I'm in. I don't want to look when you do it, because I love my draft picks, but you got to do it. Even if they want 2 first round picks for me, this isn't a Byron Maxwell or Nnamdi Asomugh situation. This is not a player that is scheme dependent. This is not a player coming out of his prime. This is a guy smack dab, not even in the middle of it, like entering it just now. He's only been in the league for 3
right.
years, and he's the best corner in the NFL. You have got to do this, especially with the health. We were saying to do it when Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox were healthy. We were mulling,
right.
Maybe you throw Jones in there to make the compensation
less. Yeah,
it's not
just a luxury now.
It's a necessity. And really, when you look across the league, there's not many teams just willing to give up good corners. This is a unique situation where you could get the top in the game at a moment where you so desperately need help at that position. I mean, unless you're going to try to, I don't know, last night I was trying to think of other options. I mean, I know the Jets benched Tremaine Johnson 2 weeks ago, and
no,
he was good a couple
Tremaine
years
Johnson.
Ago, but like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's one of the bigger names that could be available right now, showing you that it's got to be Jalen Ramsey, and for me, it's got to be now. And maybe you can make it easier by throwing in a corner so you don't have to give 2 first-round picks. Maybe they still would take Sidney Jones. At this point, I'm willing to do it, and they got to get it done. We got to take a break here on Lockdown Eagles. When we come back, we will put a wrap on this post-game show, a fun one. Hope you're enjoying it as the Eagles get to 2-2, 34-27 win yesterday against the Green Bay Packers. Don't go anywhere. This is Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, this isn't just for all of you out there who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up. It's Blue Chew. Blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, none of that awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's B-L-U-E, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today. All right, everybody, we are back. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri wrapping up this Friday edition of the podcast, recapping the Eagles' 34-27 win in Green Bay. Gino, 2-2. Look, last year, that looked bad because they were coming off a devastating, heartbreaking loss against the Tennessee Titans where they should have been 3-1. This year, 2-2. Yes, there is a scenario. They should probably be 4-0 right now. I think this team is good, and they're their own worst enemy, and it's why they're not 4-0. But 2-2, with the Jets coming to town next week, Sam Darnold might play. But the Eagles could very well at home be playing Luke Falk next week, getting to a huge opportunity to get to 3-2 with a three-game road trip coming up against Minnesota, Dallas, and Buffalo. You had to get this win, and it's huge for this team, even just as a confidence booster too. And you're getting Deshaun Jackson back next week.
Yeah, I didn't staple this as almost a must-win as I did almost.
It was close for me.
For me, how I did this was almost as a barometer test. Like, how are you going to compete in the NFC? Like, if they came out and laid an absolute duck yesterday, I would have said, yeah, that was a must win. But how they played yesterday, it instilled a lot of confidence in me, and especially with their second half of their schedule where they have a favorable home stretch, they have a lot of easy teams on the back end. It was, how can you win these big games, the big games against Dallas that you're going to have to play, the big games against Seattle that you're going to play. And yesterday was a huge test of that. And now it came on a Thursday night. You have a mini bye week. Like you said, we might be playing a Sam Darnold-less Jets team. We're going to get healthy. Man, if this team is fully healthy outside of Deshaun, I may even take another week and rest Deshaun going against a poor Jets team, let's say. Oh, I'll be a little nice to
them. I think that's an understatement,
with a currently poor Jets team. And
we get to go from Matt LaFleur to Adam Gase. Oh, boy, I'm pumped. Yeah.
What a wonder that'll be. But, yeah, man, you're sitting here. This was a huge confidence booster. That game next week against the Jets should be another huge confidence booster. You want the Eagles just to impose their will against that roster. I just am speechless with how happy I am that they came out with that victory yesterday. Just not from a fan perspective, just the perspective of looking at this team for what it was, and a team that a lot of people wrote off during the week and said, oh, their defense can't get it done. The narratives around Carson Wentz just are still ludicrous to me. But finally, they got the taste out of everybody's mouth and just kind of like punched everybody in the face and said, yeah, we're the Philadelphia fucking Eagles, man. Sorry for my language there, but still, like, we came out and we were underdogs and we went to Lambeau Field and we broke a streak that of what, 68 unbeaten games when Rodgers was up 10 points at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, that's it. They 68-0-1, I think, was the stat.
Yeah, and they broke that streak much like they did to Tom Brady in Gillette a couple years back. Mm-hmm. So the Philadelphia Eagles are the breakers of streaks. They're currently sitting in second place in the NFC East and have the best win for an NFC East team currently, in my opinion.
Wait, you don't mean the Cowboys-Dolphins win is?
that was a huge victory for them, yeah. Man. I know, that's a big
Dak
one.
Dak Prescott looks like an MVP, man. Rosen. Dak Prescott looks like an MVP playing these great Dolphin and Giants defenses, huh?
And that's why it was a huge barometer test to me, because I think right now Green Bay has arguably the best defense in the NFC. I mean, you're going to be tough to argue otherwise. I mean, their front is susceptible in the run game. We saw that yesterday. But on the back end, they have the chess pieces to match up with anybody. Like,
Tepper kept Jaire Alexander yesterday.
He's
that
a dog,
guy
man.
Is
not even just him, but
already.
Kevin King played out of his mind. Savage stepped up in big roles. Amos took on the responsibility of covering Zach Ertz. I mean, the only one that let him down was Blackman, really, but even Josh Jackson had a good game. They have a good young core, and that was a great barometer test, because if you can go out and beat that defense, in my mind, you can go out and compete with any defense, and Minnesota's defense isn't as great when you go on the road. I don't think Dallas's defense is as good as the Packers is, honestly, as whatever people want to say that Dallas's defense is elite. Say what you want to say, but until they have a test, a good test, I don't want to hear otherwise. Green Bay had some very good tests with Minnesota, with the Bears a couple weeks prior. Yeah, they've had some good games, and they came out on top. So for the Eagles to come out on top, the best win for an NFC East team so far into this young season, and just carry that momentum forward, make the adjustments, get healthy, and just continue to roll, because this offense in the past 3 years has put up the most points through this four-game stretch that they have since 2017, their Super Bowl year. So just continue to score points, continue to play good situational ball on offense, learn to play situational ball on defense, and you're going to have a complete team. I mean, the depth has taken, it's been depleted both in the secondary, both on the defensive line, but you figured out ways to get around that. Just put together a complete 60-minute football game, Lou, and this offense can score like 40-plus points. If they just put the ball in the end zone and just don't shoot themselves in the foot, they are cooking right now. It is just unbelievable to see, and they are having their way with even the best defense. Just continue to play Philadelphia Eagles football, and you will win these games. And they played with their identity yesterday, and that was a true Philadelphia Eagles win. Both on the offense and both on the letdown of defense, we knew that was what was going to happen. We knew we were going to sweat out the last 15 minutes of the game. It is the Philadelphia Eagles of the Doug Peterson era. Get used to the new norm of sweating out football games. It's how it's going to be until he's gone. But hats off to that team. A resilient team. Everybody wrote them off. I think the entire PFF staff picked Green Bay yesterday. I know a majority of the ESPN guys picked Green Bay yesterday. So when the dogs are in their cage and they need a bite to eat, that's when they run faster, and they did that yesterday.
That's a good way to wrap up today's edition of Locked on Eagles. The Eagles take it 34-27 at Lambeau Field. They hand Aaron Rodgers his first ever loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. They are 2-2, and they play the New York Jets next Sunday. We got more than a week here of podcasts coming up, so don't worry, me and Gina will be back very shortly to continue to take a look at this win in Green Bay and move forward against the New York Jets, and look, all that and more right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Make sure you're subscribed. 4 to 6 shows a week downloaded into your phone on any podcast provider or on LockedOnEagles.com. And the conversation always continues on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino_LOE. That's going to do it for my co-host Gino Camilleri. I'm Louis DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.